Americans seem to love choices. In 1975, the average American household could choose from 6 TV stations. Today, some cable companies bring us more than 100. In 1975, the average supermarket stocked 9,000 items. Today's supermarkets offer 30,000 items to choose from. Shopping centers offer even more choices. In Malls of America especially, we can all agree that we're pro-choice. But what choices do we really have? And what's the alternative to a world of choices? Historian William Leach contends that the market world of choice boils down to this. On the micro level, it does mean that consumer choice rules. But on the macro level, it means that those with the capital and the agenda create the context, the boundaries, the entire culture within which ordinary people make their choices. Americans, in other words, have little control over the larger arena in which they choose their goods and services. Leach suggests that we choose among the products on the shelves, but we don't choose who makes them or what workers get paid. We don't choose working conditions or how manufacturers make our goods. We don't choose how natural resources are grown or extracted, how they are processed, or how industrial wastes are handled. We don't choose how products are transported to the malls of America, or how they are portrayed in advertising. We don't control the spaces where we buy stuff, or how products are displayed. We don't even get to negotiate the price. In essence, after all the big choices have been made by big business, we get to make the little decisions that social critic Jeffrey Schrank calls pseudo-choices. Do I want Coke or Diet Coke? Abercrombie or The Gap? Khakis or jeans? MSNBC or TBS? For the sake of our sanity, we usually narrow the number of considerations in making a choice. We limit its scope. We ask this style or that one, this color or that one. But we don't generally ask this future or that one, this society or that one, this kind of planet or that one. In effect, we choose not to answer the most important questions of contemporary life. Hey, if it's good enough for General Motors or General Mills or General Electric, it's good enough for us. In his thoughtful essay, The Tyranny of Choice, Stephen Waldman acknowledges the benefits of consumer choice, but contends that too much freedom of choice is a bad choice. When we choose to have so many choices, we have implicitly chosen a system with at least 4 dubious side effects. It consumes time, it erodes commitment, it undercuts community, and it creates self-doubt. It does take time to make all these choices. We often consult consumer reports, online buying guides, our neighbors and colleagues, and our families before we can buy something as simple as a toaster. We check prices at 2 stores, and we repeat the process for each significant purchase. In a multiple-choice world, too, our commitments are also constantly challenged. Is this car good enough? Is this computer fast enough? Is this husband as good as all possible others? And our communities suffer, too. In 1955, only 4% of Americans had left the churches of their childhood. By 1995, more than 30% had. We make choices that may be good for individuals, but may be bad for the communities that make individual life worth living. Finally, choice overload creates self-doubt in 2 ways. For one, it makes us wonder about the quality of the choices we've made. Commercials abound with people who've made the wrong choice and who are paying dearly for it. But choice overload also makes us doubt whether there is a substantial self aside from the lifestyle choices we make in the marketplace. If I am what I buy, am I only what I buy? Is this all there is? From the American Studies Museum, this is Dr. America, a choice specimen if ever there was one.